Hello all, I'm Bob Boylan with All Songs Considered, and today a conversation with Nathaniel Rateliff and one of his bandmates from the Night Sweats, keyboardist Mark Schusterman. They're here to play DJ, to pick music they love, and in this case, songs that influenced the making of their new album, Tearing at the Seams. And that album just came out today. It's their second studio album.
You start looking mean. You need something to ruin. You carved out your name. Lining up for you.
The scrappy-looking, mostly bearded, all-mustache band of eight make music steeped in rhythm blues and a good dose of old-time rock and roll. When Nathaniel and Mark came to our New York studios a few weeks ago, I was in D.C. listening to one of their picks, a song from the late 1960s, written by Leon Russell about singer Rita Coolidge and performed here by Joe Cocker, and the song is Delta Lady. You can sing along.
Yeah.
You getting comfy there?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we're good.
Good.
Are you over there?
I am here. I am rolling. I am born rolling.
Cool.
It's Bob here.
Hey Bob. Cool. I'm Nathaniel and Mark here.
Hey Bob.
Hello there. Mark, we've seen each other, but I don't...
We have, yeah. I'm Mark Schusterman. I play the keyboards in Night Sweats. Play the piano and the Hammond organ.
But he is also generally our, like, Spotify playlist guy.
So. Yeah, I do a Spotify playlist for the band called The Beat Don't Sleep.
Ooh, tell me about that.
I've been doing a playlist on my own for a while, like 10 or so songs a week. It's mostly old stuff, but, you know, I'm putting in new tunes that I've been listening to of new artists, but a lot of it's just kind of older tunes, and it's all over the place. It's some Exotica stuff, some more found sound stuff, but also a lot of soul, R&B, and rock and roll.
Is this for the bus?
A lot of Deep Purple right now.
Really? I didn't see that coming.
Well, there's a lot of organ. That makes sense.
Yeah. Deep Purple were a great band for heavy metal organ.
Yeah, exactly.
He was talking about modding his Hammond earlier, so now that all makes sense.
God. I used to tour with the Leslie Cabinet, although...
I tour with two.
You tour with two? Oh, jeez. We had nobody else to carry it, however.
I was not allowed to do it until we got a crew, I think.
Yeah. In the beginning, I was like, a Nord will be fine.
Yes. No one will know. Yeah, for those who don't know what we're talking about, the Hammond organs, beautiful organ, and one of the reasons it's so beautiful, it uses these speakers oftentimes that are these beautiful speakers that actually rotate. They spin around. You've seen them, I'm sure, at concerts, and it gives such depth and warmth, and this bottom speaker, this big bottom speaker turns as well. What a beautiful sound. Back in the old days when I played synth in a band, they didn't know how to mic those things, and the only way to make a good sound was on my mono ARP Odyssey was to throw it into a big Leslie cabinet, and it sounded awesome.
Oh, sweet. That's great.
But you are definitely quite attracted to the organ. I think if I at any moment pull up any song that's on this list, let's just see if there's a Leslie in here. Or a Hammond, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
There it is.
Yep.
Let's take this to the top. I want this to be... How could we make this the first song we play? And this is a little...
if you want to.
A little playlist of what we're going to do today. Comes the chorus. So you two Mark, Nathaniel, you two have put a list together of, it's a long list, we won't get to all of them, of songs for us to play on this show today. Did anyone in particular pick this, or how did you hammer this list out?
Some of them are sort of influences from like what I was kind of thinking of when I was writing, and then Mark added a few of them there as well. But a lot of this stuff is like kind of what we've been listening to over the past 3 years on the road, really. So. Mm-hmm.
Nathaniel, you said you were listening to some of this stuff influences you when you write. Do you actually listen to music when you're writing? Because I know a lot of people just get themselves as far away from influences as possible. Doesn't sound like you do that.
No, but I listen to a lot of different things, you know, like Ray Charles compared to Laura Marling, there's quite a bit of difference,
right.
in styles and writing and performance and... But, you know, I think for this record, I thought a lot about narrative and what I wanted to say. And I think with this list of songs, there has a lot to do with love and sacrifice and caring about the people around you, I guess.
Let's pick one.
Mm-hmm. You know, let's start with Nothing Not Nearly, Laura Marling, since I've known her for a long time. And it's been interesting to see her grow as a person. And because I started touring with her when she was 19, so... A lot has changed in her life since then, and I just think the writing's spectacular on that song, and I could really identify with it in the last year of my life and a lot of things I went through. Lake Mills.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Is he doing that rhythm chunk? Or
he
that
produced
Laura?
A record, and I think that is him playing slide.
I bet. It sounds like Lake Mills. His production is so rad. That, like, opening guitar, just...
Yeah, it's killer.
Barrage.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about this song that you said, Nathaniel, at the beginning, you've gone through a lot in the past year, and this song, and she's gone through a lot.
Yeah, I'm... Yeah, at one point I was like, man, I hope she's writing this for me. I was like, I've lost my hair. I can move to the woods.
The only thing I learned in a year where I didn't smile once.
Yeah, the only thing, not really. And I definitely felt like that before where, you know, I think I was just kind of struggling. And you have good times, but then you don't really like feel like you're connecting with anything. And you don't really feel like you have like true joy in your life, you know? So. And then, you know, she's like, nothing matters more than love. So I think we all try to struggle to find love in our lives. And, I mean, I always have. So it doesn't always work out, unfortunately. So,
is it easy for you to, both of you, or to make music that is so deeply personal? Is that actually maybe the only kind of music you can make? A lot of people write metaphorically or in third person or... Like
the music I make on my own is not at all personal. I can't make music personal.
Yeah.
I'm also like a lyric second person, which may be why.
Yeah, I'm a lyric first.
I can work
person.
With Nathaniel really well, because I'm really into arrangement. I'm really into. I love the way her voice sounds on this song. The vibrato she uses is gorgeous. And
what's she singing about, Mark?
What is she singing about? I don't know. Yeah. Like getting dinner. It's not my first impression of a song, but it's, if a song is great, it'll force me to hear those words, and then a lot of times that's what really drives it home.
Well, let me ask you, when you guys are all working together, big band, and it's your time, Mark, to find the keyboard part in the song, where do the words come into how you start to feel and play a tune?
When we're working together, I always hear Nathaniel's words because, you know, he's a very strong lyrical writer. Mm-hmm. And I just try and, a lot on this record, I'm just trying to follow his voice. Like, there's a lot of organ on it that I'm really just like almost trying to sing with him, but with the organ, mm-hmm. and play it that way.
Uh-huh. I bet this is you, yeah.
Oh yeah, baby. See, he's screaming, and I'm screaming on the organ.
I played a little of the song intro on the new record. It's a great cut. Hate pulling it down there, but is it this song?
Jeffrey Daisy.
this feels like this came alive in a room together. Would I be right about that?
It is exactly that. it's everybody in one room. A lot of our new record is recorded that way. But a lot of the records that we all love, I feel, are done in one room with, just instruments bleeding all over the place, and the sounds getting crossed. But
and when people, a lot of this record for people, when you hear instruments are bleeding all over the place, that has more to do with microphones picking up sounds that aren't supposed to be picking up those sounds. I just like set
no,
the
we're
record
just
straight.
Punching each other.
Yeah. No, I meant it like, you know, they're just suffering those instruments. We really love, we've become a live band and a band over the last 3 years. And I thought it was important for us to try to have that aspect in the studio. And Richard, it's all for it.
So Richard
Richard Swift is, Swift. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, go.
Is our producer. And he's always like, I don't know, let's try to do the whole thing with one mic. So that's kind of his approach.
I love that guy.
Me too. And he just likes getting weird with the music too. He's he'll always be like, "You got me weird, man." So
For those who don't know, Richard Swift, you probably heard many of his records. He's also a musician. His solo records are pretty great. Plays with the Arcs these days. Minor Birds is a record recently that he did. He's got a little
Damien Girardo.
Yeah, that's right.
Lucius, I think he just did their most recent record. I mean, he was working on it.
Yeah, I think they're still.
Who are also on your, a bit on your record, at least. Is it just Holly and Jess from Lucius?
Yeah, just those two.
The studio that he has is in somewhere in Oregon, like Cottage Grove or someplace.
Yeah, exactly. It's just south of Eugene. And it's a bit of a lackluster if you have the idea of a studio being like a lot of shiny equipment and interns running around to get lunch and that sort of thing.
Isolation booths.
Isolation booths, headphone mixes, that kind of stuff. There really isn't that in his studio. It's like a lot of the record, you know, we were just sitting in the room together with no headphones. It'd be like Pat would have headphones on just because his ears hurt him.
So how do you work with Richard? Or let's just talk about this record. You get to this studio and in somewhere in the middle of Oregon, you the whole band is there at the beginning and question mark, and then and some of the songs maybe are written. Just paint the picture for me.
For this record, we actually went and like just stayed at a house in New Mexico in the middle of nowhere and demoed a lot of the songs, and came out of that with 11 songs. And we were there for 7 days and did 11 songs. Brought those 11 songs to Richard. And then, you know, he had kind of already listened to them, which was pretty hilarious because our one joke song was the one he thought was the best. It was like some late night rendition of like Andy playing flute. And it was called like White Suit.
Yeah, it's like a song that Pat and I jokingly play at soundcheck and everyone laughs about. And he was like, you know what? I think this song's got legs. Yeah. We should work on it. Did not make the record.
But our first day with Richard, we took those 11 songs to Richard in May, I believe, and had a couple of weeks there with him. And the first night there, he was just like, why don't you guys just go in and, you know, just make a little bit of noise, do like basically like a sound check. And we had all had our gear set up, so the guys went in, everybody but me, because I was like, we don't need two guitars noodling, so I'll just sit in here. And Mark started playing this like kind of tune that he usually played during sound check as well, and that ended up being Shoe Boot after just a few takes.
And the Pat you were referring to earlier is Patrick Meese, yeah? Is that the drummer?
Yep, the drummer.
Tell me who else we hear here.
Well, that's Joseph on bass. And then we have...
Joseph Pope,
yeah. And then Luke Mossman on guitar. And Mark Schusterman on organ. And then Scott Frock on trumpet. And Jeff Daisy on saxophone. Or on tenor. But the other two horn players weren't there yet, so it was actually just Andy, which I kind of love because
Barry,
he's just like playing Barry in the middle of the room, going nuts on it.
Yeah.
And then later on, he was like, man, I want to redo my Barry part and kind of match it up with the bass line. I was like, no way.
I think the rest of us were like, nope.
Leave that.
Yeah, just like, I was like, that Barry part makes no sense. It's amazing. Yeah.
And were you scribbling words, or you had words, or where were you?
I didn't have any words. This was just literally like the guys who just played it a few times, and I drunkenly stumbled in and was like, sounds good if you blabbity blue, and then I got a lot of rolling eyes, and then I went back into the sound booth and, back into the control room, and then they just did like a couple more takes, and then Richard was like, hey, why don't you guys come in here and listen to it, and that's what this is. And
we didn't think that when we were going to go in and listen that we were like going to listen to a song that was done for the record. We were like oh yeah, I mean all of our instruments sound good. Yeah. Like and we walk in and Richard is so good at making things sound good like right off the bat. I don't know, I haven't worked with a ton of producers, but you don't hear that often. Like a lot of producers are like, oh, we'll take care of that in post.
Yeah, he
Richard
mixes
just
as we're going, so
yeah, it's
like...
just it sounds great. Like you walk into the room and you're like, all right.
And he has these giant monitors. So, and his sort of mixing style is like so quiet you can barely hear it and so loud you can barely be in the room. So he's like, why don't you guys come and listen to this? And it's like louder than it was in the live room. Just like, and you're like, yeah, this sounds great. Like screaming over the performance.
Though. Yeah.
Well, let's crank it up here a little bit.
Yeah. Amazing. But it's like out of two. But it's perfect.
You were gonna say something before I cut you off there.
That organ solo, like I'm flicking the the power on and off of the Hammond. And again, if you don't know how the Hammond works, it's like you turn it off, it's like turning a car off.
Yeah, it actually has a real starter. You yeah. have like a switch that you put up, and it's like, and then another one you switch yeah. to engage the motor.
But if you turn it off and on really quick and catch it in just the right time, it'll like bend, it'll like basically pitch bend. And I did that in the middle of the song, in the middle of that solo, and then it didn't quite get back up to pitch, so the rest of the solo is me trying to like find it. But like, you know, we did that as a take, as a full band, walked in the room, and you know, I'm like, oh man, that organ didn't get back into tune. We listened to it and we were just like, we are not going to get anything better than that. Yeah. That's like as yeah. good as that solo is going to be.
Richard,
it sounds awesome.
Richard Swift always says this. He's like, well, you can't pay for a mistake like that.
Yeah. So, you know,
which is kind of what we were talking about earlier. When you're playing live in a room, like there might be like a squeaky drum pedal or, you know, mm-hmm. like you just have to get over that stuff. And,
yeah.
and I think nowadays you can go in and like edit so much stuff that I feel like some music's just becoming kind of sterile and has...
Just
no,
becoming? No. You're being kind.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, well, I was trying to be nice there.
Let's play something else on the list. Here's something that struck me. I'm going to pick something from your list, and I'll just
yeah,
kinda,
okay.
It's a 9-minute song, so I'm just going to randomly see what happens.
Are we talking about compared to what?
We are. Very good. This is Les McCann and Eddie Harris. Oh, that's a good part. I think I could have done it any part, but yes, let's listen a little bit.
The love are hanging on, we push and shove. Possession is the motivation that is hanging up the goddamn nation. Looks like we always end up in a rut. Everybody now trying to make it real compared to what. Slaughterhouses are killing hogs. Twisted children are killing frogs. Poor dumb rednecks rolling logs. Tired old ladies kissing dogs. I hate the human love of that stinking mud. I can't use it. Trying to make it real compared to what. Come on, baby.
Wow.
So good.
It really
is. Is that the
is.
Montreux? Live
yeah,
at Montreux?
It sure was.
Yeah.
Back
I just found out that was the version that made that song famous, and it was originally written by someone else, which I did not know.
Yeah. This is this was 1969 Montreux Jazz Festival. I worked in record stores back in 70, 71, well, through most of the 70s, and it easily was the biggest jazz selling jazz record I think we had. I still, because we had to write down the label and number every time you sold a record back then, because this is pre-barcode days. I still can remember the label and the number of the album, which was Atlantic 1534. Yes, indeed. It's sad and sick. But that just speaks to what a great record this was in an era that, I mean, jazz records sell, but everybody knew this song.
Yeah. It's funny because you don't hear it as much anymore. But, you know, now we have three pretty amazing horn players in our band, and I feel like I've really had to, and even like going to New Orleans a lot, there's so much horn music that I love, just like all those different melodies and voices kind of together sometimes. And then just great solos, and like, you know, you can't really... I don't know. It's hard sometimes when you're playing live. Solos just happen, and you can't recreate them. You know, so like that. Some of his stuff he's doing there just sounds so good to me.
Mark, how's your Les McCann? I mean, I can hear you guys down in New Orleans breaking into that tune at the end.
Oh yeah, I mean, that would be that awesome. Would be.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I will have to work on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It strikes me, the music that you both love, we talked about, is often music that's live, that's recorded live, either in a studio or record, or happens live. That excitement of the single take is really important to both of you. But then also, this is music that came out, I don't know how old you both are, but I'm going to guess, let's go, you know, in late, we'll say late 30s, okay? Would I be close?
Thanks.
Yeah, yeah. So there
yeah,
we go.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, okay. And then, and so easily this, most of this music that I see on your list was, had its heyday in easy 15 years before you guys were born. And so I'm kind of wondering how it all happened. What's your attraction to it? How did you both find this music?
I found a lot of, after my dad passed away, he had a big record collection. Going through those records, and a lot of it, you know, when I was a kid, it was I wasn't supposed to listen to secular music because we were in a Christian household. But then my dad, you know, secretly had his, like, giant stash of vinyl.
Where was
and
that?
And then going,
I mean,
through
did,
all
were you
of
even
that.
Aware of that as a kid, that he had this?
I knew about it, and, yeah. like, kind of before he had passed away, he started getting a little, he lightened up, and then we started listening, like, to oldies radio, and he introduced me to, like, listening to Van Morrison, and I'd heard Bob Dylan for the first time. With
and
him,
you were how old?
I was probably, well, I'm 38, and that was 25 years ago.
Okay, so
whatever,
you're 13.
That is, like, yeah. 13, 14, yeah. Going through his records after he had passed away was sort of, like, my connection to him, and, like, kind of the story that he left me, whether he'd been to or not. And, you know, going through those records, I found stuff like Van Morrison and Mad Dog and Englishman, Joe Cocker, Delta Lady, Leon Russell, and then, you know, things like Big Muddy Waters sings Big Bill Brunsey and Muddy Waters folk singer, you know, just like kind of a lot of different things that I had never really listened to, and kind of getting, I don't know, my like small education from that vinyl collection made me start collecting my own vinyl. And kind of really dig into sort of like, you know, at first like sort of like the 60s and 70s. And then, you know, as I've gotten older, you know, I started to fall in love with stuff like Nina Simone and then also like Ray Charles live at Newport in 1958. Like just such an amazing live recording that's what they sound like live is just incredible to me. That's what bands sounded like on stage, you know. And so I guess kind of, you know, I've always been a big fan of history. And so through my dad and what he left me and then my own curiosity, I just kept digging, and I still do, you know. So.
You want to introduce this Ray Charles song?
Yeah, this is Fool for You, live at Newport, 1958. This is Ray Charles.
You didn't love me no more. Hey, hey, but I wanna know, now. Oh, oh, what makes me be now? I just wanna say that I'm a fool for you now. Oh, right now. I wanna say I'm a fool for you.
And Mark, you come into this music. How did that happen?
I guess also dads. I mean, my dad was very much into jazz. I grew up pretty much exclusively listening to, he listened to the Beatles, and then he listened to classical and jazz. And the Beatles were like the only rock and roll band that was worth anything. And then and then it was like jazz and classical. So I grew up playing classical piano and listening to jazz piano. I kind of wasn't allowed to play jazz piano till I got good at classical. And I kind of never ended up playing jazz piano. I've more been teaching myself that recently. I went straight from classical to rock and roll, piano, Monk and Ray Charles and Bill Evans and that kind of stuff was always playing in the house and inspired me. And the same thing happened. As I got older, I worked at a record store, started collecting my own records. And I think if you are into music and you love it, anyone that you're listening to that's contemporary is going to have an interview where they're like, oh, the best music is, you know, this and this and this, and it's all coming from, you know, the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. And it was just a beautiful time for music to be made. Mm-hmm. And
it was all new. It was brand new discoveries of, like, different types of cultures coming together to create that type of music. And that's kind of why it just doesn't feel like it'll happen again.
I know. It's a sad thought. And the collaboration that was going on back then, where, like, every musician was, they were going to shows all the time, and they were meeting musicians totally cross-genred and talking about music in a way with excitement and collaborating and working together. We try and do that. We want to be a part of that experience, and but, you know, who knows if it'll ever happen again. We've gone pretty far away from it.
When you guys go to a music festival, let's say you play, well, I guess you played Newport Folk as opposed to Newport Jazz these days. But let's say you went down to New Orleans. The intermingling, do you get enough time to meet and hang and do anything? What would foster that?
It's been kind of cool coming up over the last 3 years in the same time, people like Leon Bridges and Margot Price, and running into those folks and watching, you know, their lives and audience change. And sometimes it's good to just talk to somebody, because there was times where I was like, Leon, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Like, like, how do you feel in front of these big audiences in festivals where you don't have the same connection? And he's like, I don't know, man. He's like, I don't know, you know. And so it's kind of, in some ways, I feel like we're all in a similar spot. And when we see each other, it's always good, you know, whether it's just like hanging out backstage at a festival or going out on the town or meeting somewhere and having dinner together. And it still feels like a real family thing. And I know, like, for us in the Night Sweats, we always try to bring those people on stage that are friends of ours and try to collaborate and keep that sort of family and community feeling together. You know?
Some festivals do a better job than others, too, of fostering that. Like
Newport's amazing.
Newport's amazing, and the New Orleans Jazz Fest is amazing.
I don't feel like I'm the caliber of musician I need to be to sit in with any of those guys. I'll sing.
And then festivals like Coachella, they're just massive, and we're all just, like, walking around with our jaws dropped, like, what is happening? Like, we don't fit in here.
You mean there, because it's like going to the checkout at the grocery store where it's your turn. You do your thing as a band.
Exactly.
And then you're out.
Yeah.
When you talked about Newport, there's lots of stuff that happens backstage that all musicians are more or less together in a room back there. They're eating together. They're watching each other's sets. You can feel free enough to walk around the grounds and people won't, you know, whatever.
Right.
Right. And then there's the evening stuff where there's sessions with the Blues Cafe, and there's, you know, all sorts of stuff.
And there's not a lot of space there. So, you know, like, I remember walking around one time, and then Jay Sweet, who runs the festival, was walking with Patti Smith, and she was like, oh, Patti, this is Nathaniel. And I was like, hi. And I was standing there with Joseph and my wife at the time, and she's like, you all look like family. Like, yeah, we kind of are. You know, and so those kind of things just happen because you feel like really open and you don't feel sheltered. And so, you know, folks like Patti Smith or John Prine will just be like walking from one place to another, or Kris Kristofferson. And you just be like, hey, how's it going? You know, some of those larger festivals, though, it doesn't have that sense of family and community. It has more of a, I don't know, it just gets kind of lost, and it's more of a mob mentality sometimes. So. Yeah.
How'd you two meet?
Boy, I remember
Yeah, go ahead. You got it. Well, we've been in Denver for a long time. Just like, yeah. I remember seeing Nathaniel a long time ago. I was in a different band called Widowers, and we played shows together.
Yeah.
But then eventually, when we were talking about playing music, you came to a Blue Rider show. It's another band.
Yeah, I'd seen Mark play keyboards, and I was my friend James Hahn, who had played with me for years, just wasn't really able to tour anymore, and I was like, man, I need a badass keyboard player. And I just walked up to Mark one day. I was like, how do you feel about playing in a band? And sent him some songs. There were early Night Sweats demos. And
what year is
this? I remember he sent me, that was like 5 years ago, 6 years ago. He sent me Trying So Hard and Look at Here. I was like, yeah, totally. I'd play, you know, not thinking much of it. And he sent me those two songs, and I was just like, whoa, I'm definitely gonna do this. You know, they were just like so powerful, and I did whatever it took, and we did some tours supporting his like folk band stuff, which was also great. But then once the Night Sweats stuff really got going, it was
surprised us all.
Yeah, it did.
Let me play this from the new record. I'll play Tearing at the Seams. So let me ask each of you a question. So you play music together now. It's been a handful of years. Mark, when you play with Nathaniel, like, what do you get from what he does? What inspires you about Nathaniel? And then I'm going to flip it around, ask you, Nathaniel.
Cool. I think Nathaniel is just a very powerful songwriter. As someone myself, that I try to write songs, it blows my mind the kind of songs that he can write, and I just want to do justice to that song. You know, sometimes he's played me songs that just in his living room that just like hit me in the heart, and I think like, I can't make this song any better, and he's like, no, I want to, you know, I want to play this as a band. I think this song will be good as a band. And so my job is to try and make whatever I'm doing do the song justice and make the song better. And it's a challenge, but it's also, you know, it makes me get places that I didn't think that I could get when I'm playing on my own or when I'm playing with other bands where I'm more leading the way. It's like trying to just do justice to his music. It's really inspirational.
You do some pretty uplifting stuff under those vocals of his, I'm going to say. It's pretty
Thank
wonderful.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had somebody say, talking about the record. There's a lot of melodies. But I never thought of it that way. I just, you know, when we were recording a lot of the songs, like, I just didn't trust that Mark and everybody in the band is doing what is best, you know, not because of their egos or anything like that, but actually I feel like we're just all trying to serve the song and do what is best for it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And Mark inspires you how?
Yeah, well, you know, Mark always has a lot of good ideas and a lot of good melodies, and I'm, you know, I try to write the best I can, but I'm really always hung up on melodies. And so I like to listen to the stuff he comes up with on his own. And I'm always like, what's that? Like, I won't see him for a while, and he'll come back and be playing something. I'll be like, sounds like Mark's been practicing by himself a lot. But, you know, like, I like what he brings to the table. And on stage, he's like, he has a lot of energy. You know, when he was out for a little bit last year having a baby with his wife, or you weren't necessarily having it, but...
I was there for it.
The greater you were.
That would have been our lead, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And we had a friend fill in, but it's just not the same. You know, Mark has a great voice, and there's a lot to be said singing harmony with someone else. And there's a certain way I like it to be done, and Mark nails it, you know, and but also just brings a lot of energy. And, you know, he's our hype man. So he's out there dancing and having a good time, and you kind of have to sometimes let go of whatever's happening in your personal life, or, you know, what's happening off stage, to go out on stage and lay it all out there. And I feel like Mark always does that.
If I were to play, we'll go out on one song in your list, maybe a song that you would go down the road singing. I don't know. I'm just
one we would sing together.
Do you ever do that?
Tonight, they drove old Dixie down.
That's so funny, because I had my finger on the button of that song. I was wondering. Oh, gosh, what a great song this is. Hey, listen, it's been great talking to you both. I love the new record. Can't wait to see you guys do it live.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah. And let's give a listen to Levon Helm singing this amazing song from the band, 1969. You ready for the chorus, folks? Here it comes. Thanks, all.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was fun. I enjoyed it. Nathaniel Ratliff and Mark Schusterman, the new album by Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats, is called Tearing at the Seams. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.